I'm Michael Hall.
And I'm Andy Davis.
And we want to welcome you to The Dad Vantage, the D&D podcast where two old school dads talk about new school play.
And sometimes play new school play, which is what we're doing today, right?
We're playing again. I'm doing some muscle up. Like, anytime I can get extra D&D in and talk about D&D all at the same time, I'm happy.
It's very exciting. Very exciting. As you have, as our listeners have no doubt guessed, we are doing another one shot, two shot kind of thing.
Stories from the Shattered Chasm.
That's right. Stories from the Shattered Chasm. Peter is joining us as a player this time.
Woo,
again. Ruh-roh. So Peter's back. I think my daughter is getting slightly jealous, Michael. So we might have to get my daughter involved in one of these coming one of these days. But yeah,
let's do it. Anyway,
very exciting.
This week, I'm going to DM.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm excited.
We're going to start our adventure at the Soiled Sow, a small, out of the way tavern in the town of Patch in the northwest corner of the Shattered Chasm. Patch is the agrarian center of the chasm at large, heavily populated by Harrigan, and sits just south of the Mountains of Air. Your two adventurers who are a bit down on your luck, stuck in the patch with very little coin and not much else going on. The Shattered Chasm is an old west style environment, much like the high plains desert environment like northern Arizona, the Grand Canyon, southern Utah, and the like. And you have been approached by Petra, a Harrigan farmer from a small town northeast of the patch in the Air foothills, about 2 or 3 days away, called Silver Springs Gulch. And Petra has managed to convince the two of you to come north and defend her town from the Moonfang Gang, a pack of bandits that has been plaguing the town of Silver Spring Gulch for years, much like the Magnificent Seven or the Seven Samurai. Classic Old West trope. The farmers have offered you nothing, really, but food and lodging over the last few days. You've gone about recruiting a group of NPCs to help you in protecting Silver Springs Gulch. So I'm going to turn it over to you, too.
I can go first. I am playing Walton Summerfield. Walton is 18 or 19 years old. He's really relatively quite young. Walton is corn-fed. Walton is just absolutely massive. I mean, just big strapping chest, the whole thing. But he doesn't look like a bodybuilder. He looks like somebody who has been throwing hay his whole life, which is, in fact, what Walton has been doing. Walton is an orc from the Highlands, which are the southeast corner and more in the northwest corner of the chasm. And he is part of the Summerfield clan. Walton is just this big dude. He's wearing overalls. He doesn't have any shoes. He doesn't have a shirt. And he carries a big pitchfork. And he's almost on a Rumspringer. The Summerfield are a very prosperous clan, but they expect that the people of their clan spend some time outside of the Highlands and do good works. So he is carrying the Farmer's Friend, which is a family weapon that he has had since, as soon as his family recognized just how big and strong he was going to be, they bestowed this family weapon for him, and it's the pitchfork, and it's the Farmer's Friend. And he has been traveling all around helping people in need and doing good works, but really focused on helping farmers. So I think when Petra showed up, he was 100% like, oh yeah, of course I'm gonna do this. He would do it by himself, even if he didn't have everybody else with him.
Great. You know. What class is he?
He's a barbarian. He follows the path of the Juggernaut.
Oh, it's the new path.
That's from Tal Dore, I think.
Oh, Tal Dore, right.
From the Tal Dore book. So he has a bunch of things that allow him to both move people and not be moved himself.
Yeah. So perfect.
Yeah, he's seven foot tall, just absolutely gargantuan dude who is generally speaking, quite gentle. But when he sees injustice or plants being hurt,
he rages.
He rages.
He rages. He gets angry.
He's a vegan rager.
He's a vegan rager. Yeah, rager.
All right, Pete, let's hear.
So I am playing Jane the Snapcaster Helm. Jane was originally raised as an orphan in the Church of Talos, but quickly she realized that she's actually an Azamar of Saloon, an entirely different and generally opposed god, at which point she was like, I don't necessarily feel safe here, and didn't want to stick around, and left for the chasm, where she's developed her magic and a reputation as a quick draw spellcaster, whether it be in Bounty, one of the big trade hubs in the Chasm, taking down bounties or wandering around, testing her mettle and being a little bit more roguish than the caster archetype would entail. But class-wise, she is Tempest Domain Cleric from her time with the Church of Talos and an 8th level Lunar Sorcery Sorcerer.
Nice. Oh, love it. Lunar Sorcery is fantastic. Love it. So both 10th level.
We're both 10th level total, but I have a little bit of a weird multi-class going.
No, that's great. I think what's cool and what we'll see here is that we've pretty much stuck with 8th level and below on the show for a lot of reasons. So we wanted to also see what it's like and showcase a little bit higher level play. And so you'll get to do that, both of you.
Yeah.
It's great. I gave you a bunch of choices and we had a little session zero where Jane and Walton chose their compatriots.
You had a variety of choices to choose between to build your NPC crew, each of which giving the obvious benefits of their class, but also some additional benefits in the setup phase that we'll get to in a second. So you had a choice between three 8th level characters, and you chose an 8th level centaur battlemaster archer named McQueen. And then you had two options between five choices of 5th level characters, and you chose a satyr cleric by the name of Kambe. And then you also chose a silver dragonborn horizon ranger named Horst. So there's McQueen, Kambe, and Horst.
And then we can't forget the twins.
And then, yes, you've got two third level twins named Vin and Vang. Vin and Vang are both fighters. Vin is a sentinel and Vang is a great weapon master. So a little, not completely identical, but pretty close.
The worst, actually, when you think about it, you got one that's stopping people and the other one's just beating the bejeebers out of them.
Seems like a good pairing if they're together.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's your crew. After a very hard three-day ride northeast to Silver Springs Gulch, you descend on this town nestled between a large northern plateau and a number of small hills on the southeast side. It is much poorer than you expected. It is tiny, maybe 30 buildings at most, sprinkled around the town square and along the main road, which travels from the north corner of the town to the west side. Large fields populate the southern part of the town, and there's a river, the Silver Spring itself, that bisects the town from the outlying farms and fields on the eastern side. You ride along a low western wall that stretches from the southern fields all the way up to the western gate into the town. The western gate itself sits at the intersection of the town road, the western road, and a road from the northern plateau. Working counterclockwise from the west gate, you would bypass a small road that ran through the southern field and enters the town from the south called the Field Road, entering right at the town center. A little farther around the clock, maybe at 3 o'clock, is the East Bridge Road, which crosses the Silver Spring with a small wooden bridge between the eastern fields and into the town center. Just a little bit farther north, maybe at 1 p.m. on a clock, is the Northern Road that comes from a small forested area north of the town just below the plateau. With a mixture of trepidation and excitement, you are welcomed into the town by Petra, the old man, and any number of the 100 or so farmers that live in the town itself and the surrounding fields. They are excited and nervous about strangers here to defend them against Romulus Moonfang, the infamous bandit leader, and her Moonfang gang.
The bandits strike one or two times a year, always on a full moon, stealing.
I'm just gonna say, there's something about the name Romulus and Moonfang which I feel might be a clue.
Yeah.
I think there might be a clue.
And they only attack on full moons. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's every 28 days, like clockwork.
Yep. They steal food and sometimes people. If the bandits strike this month, the town will likely not survive this season. So in the process of arriving at this town, you have befriended, of course, Petra, and she definitely has a grudge against the Moonfang. You also, once you arrive on town, there's the old wise man of the town. He was the one who advised Petra to go out and find and hire adventurers. And the old man
has collected for you a number of special magic cactus needles that, when pricked by them, provide night vision for 1 hour. He presents them to you in the ceremony of your entrance.
He has given you 9 needles of night vision. And then in the course of setting up, you actually befriend a number of the tween children that follow you everywhere. There's Hita, a Harrigan, Speck, a half-orc, and Drift, a half-elf. And they're always constantly underfoot. Somewhat helpful, hard workers, but probably a little bit too young to defend the town on the front line. Maybe they're useful as runners. Who knows? Maybe tell me how you guys knew each other. Did you meet in Patch? Did you meet before? Then we can start getting into the setup.
I think we met before Patch. I think to me, it's a Mutt and Jeff thing. You have this very, for all that he's a barbarian, I think Walton is a placid person. And I think Deep Stillwater is kind of a vibe.
Right.
And I feel like he finds Jane very entertaining because it seems like her energy is like completely at odds to what his. So I think they like literally met on the road and Jane was doing crazy shit. And Walton was like, let's keep traveling together. You're the kind of person I'm like, you're kind of the, like, he's opposites. Still a teenager, right? You know, he's like, oh, hey, you're fun. Like, you know, you're a fun person to hang out with. Maybe that's his take on Jane. I don't know where Jane.
I think the initial take on Walton was absolutely like the, oh, this guy's great, mainly because I get into a lot of shit. And I think after like the first couple times, they're like, okay, this is like a good kid type of thing. Let's try to stick by.
How old is Jane?
I think Jane is like, I'll be honest, Jane is also pretty young, all things considered. She's like maybe 20.
20, 25. Like, so she's a few years older, like slightly more.
Yeah, a few years older, has been the chasm, has been jumping between a bunch of towns in the chasm.
Yeah, you're definitely more experienced in the chasm than Walton is. Walton's basically just been walking all over the place. He walked out of the Highlands and started like, oh, I'm going to walk up to Gap Ferry and I'm going to walk over to this place. And, you know, he's enough of a lunk that he doesn't notice half the stuff. People are like trying to cause trouble. He's like, oh, yeah, whatever. you're not going to hurt me. So I'm just going to keep on doing my thing.
I love it. All 7 of you arrive to this very dirt poor, dusty town. They've just about completed harvesting for the season.
So the fields are relatively bare.
Relatively bare, correct.
Okay.
And you've got about a week before the full moon. So not a lot of time.
So you're significantly under the gun to prep this town in time for the arrival of the bandit. We're going to handle this in a series of skill tests. The first one being information gathering or scouting. So scouting the local area, talking to people in the town, looking at the topography of the town, trying to figure out what might happen and how to prepare for it. Your success at this information gathering or scouting will determine how many clues you get about what might happen. It's also going to help you set up the defenses for the town. So it'll give you bonuses when we get to the defensive setup skill test. Some of the NPCs, like Horst, have benefits to each of the different skill tests. So Horst will give you a +3, for example, on this skill test of scouting. I don't think there are any other bonuses from the NPCs you chose. After this first scouting skill test, we'll have one for training the townspeople into units to help you fight, and another one to determine how many defenses you're able to set up in the town before the bandits arrive.
The first skill challenge that you're going to have is it's a DC 14, so it's not particularly high, but the degrees in which you succeed will determine what you get. The more you succeed, the better it is for you. You can choose stealth or survival, and what I'll ask is maybe whoever chooses to roleplay it a little bit more. Tell me how you're using stealth and survival to scout out or do things. And then I think Horst is proficient in stealth, so he can, or survival, one or the other, so he can give you advantage. You can get advantage from Horst, and you can get +3. So that's, so you guys need to decide who's going to do it and what does it look like.
So I was going to say Walton has proficiency in survival but not in stealth.
Yeah, I don't have proficiency in either. Jane is a little bit more of a theatrical person, so I don't particularly think that they're very good at either of those. So I think maybe if you do the survival with the help of Horst and at advantage, and that would probably be
no. I know that this is like a poor town, but I think Walton has grown up in the Highlands, and the Highlands are notable because they have lot of open area. It's like a lot of fields, and
this, you know, this is a really familiar territory.
Yeah, so this feels very similar, maybe a little more mountainous than I'm used to. But the compounds in the Highlands are all these relatively heavily fortified compounds. This type of town is very familiar to me. So I think I'm deeply connected attracted to nature and the land and the idea of the farm. So I think between Horst and I, we're able to, I think what we're able to do is do a lot of, it really is like tracking, right? It's less stealth of like sneaking along. It's more like the two of us just kind of moving very quietly up and around, trying to get out and survey the area around the town to get a real understanding of the terrain. And then also to see if we can find like tracks and spores and identify where is it likely that these people are coming from. And I think maybe at the same time, Jane is talking to the villagers, trying to help us understand, like, where do they typically come from? Just have a better understanding of what I need to look for when I'm out with Horst.
Great, love it.
So I'm going to I'll roll survival with advantage, and we'll just add plus three to both of these rolls.
Yeah, and plus whatever your...
Yeah, it should add it automatically. Right, yeah. So, oh my God.
Okay, with an extra plus three, that is a 23.
I rolled a
15.
I rolled a 15 and something less.
And a 4. No,
4.
4.
Yeah. You needed advantage pretty badly.
You needed advantage, everybody. So
well, to be fair, the 15 was the first roll.
a 23.
So that's 9 above the DC. So you didn't quite hit the plus 10. Fail would have been 2 clues. A pass would have been 4 clues. Plus 5 is 5 clues plus 2 defense. And plus 10 would have been 6 clues plus 4 defense.
Oh, so close.
So close. So,
yeah, super close, but not quite there.
But hey, so, you know what? I'll give him the other roll, 5 clues and a plus 2 to defense. I'll take it.
Okay. The first 2 clues, which are really pretty straightforward. The first 2 that you would have gotten no matter what. The Moonfang Gang usually rides in from the Northwest Plateau. That's usually where they come from. McQueen believes that the west side, from the west wall all the way down to the shallow crossing, so pretty much the whole west side of the town all the way down to where there's a shallow crossing across the river, is the hardest to defend because it's so open. But McQueen believes that you could probably cover the entire town with the right placement of archers, belying her favorite weapon, right?
So understand. They tend to come from the northwest.
Yep, they come down that northwest road. There's a road that runs along the whole west side of the town.
So we know
from
that
the plateau all the way down.
And then she believed that there were positions on this west wall that would allow archers to cover.
No, she believes that you could probably cover the whole town with the right placement of archers, say on roofs and things like that. But overall, the west side is going to be the hardest to protect because it's so open.
Okay. But that's also where the bulk of the town is on the west side.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the first clue. The second clue.
So Vin and Vang are on patrol maybe the third or fourth night out, and they come rushing back late in the evening because they managed to encounter 4 advanced scouts from the Moonfang Gang who actually cornered Kita, Speck, and Drift, the village troublemakers. Mm-hmm. They managed to kill 3 of the bandits, but 1 of them escaped.
Okay.
So they're pretty upset. Horst immediately heads out to track the scout.
And it's early in the morning when he returns, having caught and killed the scout. But he's concerned that even the presence of the scouts may have tipped off the Moonfang Gang to your plans.
Right. But Drift and Speck and
Heater are all okay. They're all fine. But a little rattled, but fine.
Yeah.
So those were sort of the basic clues. The next level up clues gives you a little bit more. The old man tells you that the villagers can flood the entire south fields every season. And this could help protect the entire west side of the village, since this will certainly be the start of the battle. So you could dam the river and flood the entire south field, which would make the only entrance, the only easy entrance, the two roads, the west wall road and the field road, which cuts through the middle of the field.
Okay.
While out on patrol, Horst is also able to find the Moonfang's camp. He comes back and tells you that there are 64 light horsemen with spears and crossbows. There's a wolf pack of at least 12, and there may be as many as 6 heavily armed lieutenants, and of course, Romulus Moonfang, who sent a shiver down his tail, and he got it out of there as quick as possible.
Okay.
A pretty
horsemen.
Big crew.
Okay, yeah, that is big crew.
So this is your fifth and last clue. Vin and Vang have been training the crews of villagers to fight on your behalf, and we'll get to how many of those villagers you're actually able to train successfully. But Vin and Vang, they like to drink a bit.
And so maybe to rouse the spirits of the teams that have been struggling with the training, Vin and Vang and maybe Jane join in some drinking games to lift the spirits. And they are able to learn that on occasion, Romulus has entered the town first and with only her wolf packs or her lieutenants separate from the main bandit crew. On those visits, it's always under the light of a full moon and usually coincided with her taking a few villagers away with her.
Okay.
And that she usually, when she entered, it's usually from the North Road.
Which is new and different information from what you've heard previously.
That is all five of our clues?
That's all five of your clues.
Okay.
Great. I have some thoughts.
Let's see how the defenses rolls come out.
All right, so the next phase is tactics. McQueen, Horst, Vin, and Vang are all helping train the peasants in archery or polearm use. This will determine how many peasants you're able to train and what types. Again, it's a DC 14 survival history, and if somebody has survival or history, and I think somebody does.
I have history at plus five.
Since I rolled the survival for the for scouting, why don't you
I'll put the history roll.
Let me double check to see if Kambay has history. So Kambay can help you so you can get advantage on history. And then
McQueen, Horst, Vin, and Vang all give you benefit to your tactics roll. So you need to add up all their bonuses on that roll.
I believe McQueen has a three, and it's two for Ving and Vang. So that's seven. So it's going to be plus 12 total.
Nice.
So we have pretty good odds of getting quite a few people. So 16 plus 12 is a 28.
All right, so you were able to get plus 10 on this. So what you're able to do with tactics, you would have been able to train four teams of peasants. If you failed, six if you passed, seven with a plus five, and the plus 10 gives you nine teams. So you can choose nine teams, which is quite a good number. Right. You could mix it up. You can either train them in ranged, so you can choose bow teams, you can choose polearm teams, you can choose nine of one, you can choose four and five, however you want to do it. But you've got the ranged teams will give you range, of course, and do about 1d6 per turn, and then the polearm teams have reach and do 1d10, and the ranged teams have fewer hit points.
I, at least when it comes to split, seeing as it's nine, my bias is towards five polearm teams and four ranged teams, because then we have a team of polearms of at least one of each of the entrances, and an extra one to either be reserves or to help shore up whatever side we aren't able to be at easily.
Yeah, I think that's right when we get down to placement. I don't want to have all of our teams so spread out. If we set one at each place, it would be better for us to fully destroy the East Bridge.
Yeah.
Right? And just eliminate that as a path. I would rather force them to have one or two choices to get in. Tactically speaking, I want to destroy all the bridges so that they have to come either from the north or the south.
Flood
the south field, and then probably I have plant growth through the farmer's friend. So I might cover the flooding so that people who do come into it are stuck in there, and maybe I would stick.
Have hallucinatory terrain, so we can
mask. Just flood it and then mask the fact that it's flooded, and then
fact that the bridges are destroyed.
So I think my inclination is to cut down the number of places where people can enter, and then treat the pikemen as a larger, maybe have two, like three and two, in two different places, so that they can really do some damage. Because otherwise, they're just going to be scattered
and picked apart.
Yeah, and they're just going to get 64 horsemen is pretty brutal. Yeah. But I like the idea of then positioning the archers in a way where they're covering the two big entrances, and we can capitalize on that.
That makes sense to me.
There's part of me that's also, is it possible? Could we entice Romulus and the lieutenants into town?
Yeah.
And then cut off their forces from them?
That's my thought of, I think Jane in particular wants some level of duel with Romulus. To what extent that is, I don't know, but Jane wants it. Jane has the energy of, I want to fight this person as close to mano y mano as I can get.
Got it.
So
Walton just shakes his head. Jane, I don't think you know what you're setting yourself up for, but if that's what you want, I'll cover you.
I have a plan. I have a plan.
Now, I know you brought a bunch of barrels of oil from Patch.
Yes, I did.
Just so long as that plan does not involve burning this entire town to the ground.
It does not involve burning this entire town to the ground.
Okay, great. That's why I am concerned for the people. And
entirely understandable. I did.
Jane, I feel like your accent is like trailing my accent.
So I'm sorry. It's a bad habit I picked up.
Well, when everybody gets into the Southern accent, it starts it starts to multiply.
It just increases tenfold.
Okay.
So four archers and five.
Let's not quite figure out where we're positioning them until we have our particular defenses figured out.
Good segue, Jane. The next thing that you get to do here in your skill challenge is you're going to roll for defenses. You've only got a week to build these defenses, so it takes quite a bit of work to make and create defenses. Again, it's a DC 14. This one, survival, history, or nature. And there's a bunch of different types of defenses. You can build blockades, you can modify the terrain to create difficult terrain, or you can do big traps. We've already proven that survival or history have the ability to get advantage.
I've got a plus five in survival.
I have a plus five in history.
How about, do we both, each one of us rolls?
Each one of us rolls one of the dice.
Oh, that works.
Since it's the same.
Sure. And then you get advantage, right? And then you get...
Well, yeah, that would be advantage because we're both rolling.
We both have the same bonus, so we're both going to roll one of the two dice.
Excellent. So you can get a plus two to it as well from your scouting.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any other pluses available.
Yeah, I don't think we have any other pluses for defense. I got... You rolled an 18.
Woo.
I have... If we add my plus five, I'm going to be at a 20 total and then 22 with it. And you're going to be at a 20 with the extra plus two.
Yeah.
So
we both rolled.
It ends up being a 22, but that does not quite get us to maximum defenses again.
Yes. We get five defenses and four braziers, it looks like. We both rolled 22, right?
Okay. Yeah. So you get six defenses and six braziers.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Great.
You can choose whatever one you want. Yeah. So there's spear fences, and then there's some pits, depending on what you want to do. And then there's impassable terrain.
So,
by impassable, it's like somebody has to stop and then take a turn to get over them. Right?
Yeah. So my immediate thought is just even if we break.
At this point, Pete and Andy are going to take a few minutes or half an hour or longer and walk through all their setup decisions. This is going to take a little bit of time, so we'll come back into and give a description on how it all went.
Andy and Pete have just spent a good amount of time setting up their defenses. They scouted the region and were able to pick up a number of clues and also help their defensive setup. They've managed to train a number of the villagers. They've managed to train nine teams. They've chosen five pole arms and four range. They had six defenses to set up around town, and then they've placed their NPCs as well. Andy or Pete,
why don't you describe to everybody how you set up the town? Imagine the map as a clock face, and we'll work our way around the map counterclockwise, starting at 9 p.m. on the west wall, which is the far west side of town. 9 p.m. What is the setup on the west wall?
So there's a low wall that follows the southwestern edge of town. Jane is going to be casting hallucinatory terrain on a big chunk of that to basically make it
probably
look more impassable. We are blocking the gate with a barricade, a large pit trap on the other side of the barricade, and then another barricade. The idea being that anybody who climbs the first barricade is going to go into the pit trap and then
have to climb out of the pit trap and the other barricade.
I think you also placed one of the pikemen units and Kambe, the NPC cleric, at that location. Now we're going to continue our way counterclockwise down the hallucinatory terrain wall that Jane created to about 6 p.m. on the south part of town.
Yes, Walton has cast plant growth to cover the fact that the fields are flooded, so they're masked by the fact that there are all these plants growing up out of the flooded waters. We have positioned a couple of barrels within the field so that we can set fire to them or break those barrels. With pre-positioned archers. The idea is to get all the riders and the direwolves strung out along this road.
The field road, which is a raised road that runs up through the middle of the south fields that are now flooded, pretty much straight up 6 p.m. up into the center of town.
Yes, so that we can hit them with a bunch of arrows at will. Then if they decide to attack the archers by moving through the field will tie them up and we'll be able to set fire to the field in the same process. We've plugged the top of the road with another pit trap, and we have two units of our pikemen as well. They're closer to the center of town. We really want that once they're on that raised road. We want to be able to hold them there without having to worry about it.
What you've described is the west wall, and then we're sliding counterclockwise around the map to the field road. You've blocked off 9 p.m. to 7 p.m., and you're funneling everybody from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. up into the town.
Yeah, exactly. The bridges on the east.
So now we've gone counterclockwise all the way around town to 3 p.m. on the map of the town. Mostly because the river runs from 1 p.m. all the way down to 6 a.m., bisecting the main town from the east fields. You flooded the fields that covers the south, and now the flooded fields and the river block the town all the way up to 3 p.m. and the bridges on the east side.
Yeah, and so there were two bridges, and we have dismantled both of those. And then we've also positioned just one unit of pikemen to help plug that up and just cover it in case there's an issue. Walton is very close to that same unit. If it turned out that someone were coming through there, Walton's pretty confident that he can slow down or hold people in that against that broken down bridge.
There is also an illusion on that main east bridge to make it look fully functional when in reality it's been stripped of all of its planks.
Yeah.
All right. And, so on the east bridge, which is 3 p.m. on the town, bridges are broken. There's an illusion on one of the bridges to make it look intact, a set of spearmen and Walton. Okay?
Yep.
And then we move up north. It's really actually quite close to the east bridge, but on the clock, it's more 1 p.m. or 12 straight up. And we are in the north road. Describe what's going on at the north road.
The north road has been left mostly open along. The north road has two low walls that kind of lead into the town. On either side of those walls, we have set up a bunch of barricades to make it incredibly hard to come through anywhere but that kind of main slot that those low walls create. As you come through there between the buildings, we have positioned two larger barricades to force people to like zigzag in between and step out into an open area to be under archer fire leading into that center of town. Behind one of the barricades, there's our last barrel of oil, being as a nice little fiery surprise for anyone who decides to step through. And in the center of town, we have our reserve group of pikemen along with our ranger Horst, and Jane is also there ready to draw and go on the bandit leader.
All right. I think that's pretty solid defenses, guys. Looking forward to see how it holds up to reality.
Even with this being as much smoke and mirrors as we actually have.
Right. Exactly. Any last setup items?
Combate has a kid, McQueen has a kid, and Horst has a kid in the center. And basically their job is to just and be going back and forth and helping us understand what's happening.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing I would say is if things start to go real bad, people should fall back to the town center where the...
Yeah.
Into so all the... Area. There is a basement in the town hall. All the townspeople who aren't battling are either... They're in the town hall.
Okay. So, yeah. If stuff starts going south, the square should be... The space to get to should be in this.
Yeah, that's the place that we're going to... That's our last stand.
The next stage of the battle has begun. The town is full of anxiety. Everyone is terrified. Thoughts of scouts that were killed by Vin, Vang, and Horst are going through everyone's head, and the tension is palpable. Kambe, the cleric with his polearm team at the west wall, recognizes the tension as the sun slowly sets in the west, and he gets his team to rouse and give a battle cheer, screaming out against the night and the fear inside of them. Vin and Vang, picking up on this, encourage the archers stretched out along the south fields to cheer, and then turn to the pole-armed teams at the field road. They follow suit, cheering, screaming wildly to let loose all the tension and fear that's built up in them. The teams with Horst and Jane in the town square yell their heads off, screaming loudly, almost in terror. Finally, the team at the bridge road, along with Walton, lets out the last final roar. Eyes peek out of the town hall as the villagers hiding there look out, wondering if maybe the battle had started. They'd all been nervous about the adventures in their town, but they were calmed by the presence of Walton.
Very much still alive.
Yeah.
So these are my people,
right?
Like the way they're all literally like half my size and scrawny, right. And I'm like, yeah, you guys are.
And it's the Town Folk are a mix of people, but they are all the same, and they're farmers. So nervous and very apprehensive about joining a battle, but they know that it is necessary if their town is to survive.
Walton starts to give a speech and then realizes he has no idea what to say. He's like, it's all gonna work out.
And then the kids, despite the brevity of the speech, look up at you in awe. Petra smiles on from her spot, and the old man sort of half salutes you.
Oh, we have those 9 things of night vision.
Yeah, I think we should give at least 1 each to Ving and Vang, at least 1 to Kombe, because I don't think any of them have night vision.
They do
does
not.
McQueen have night vision?
She does not have night vision.
Yeah.
Okay. So, then so all 5 NPCs get 1. Petra gets 1. I think the 3 left, we give an extra 1 to McQueen, because McQueen, this fight might drag, and McQueen guiding all the archers, that'll be important. And then we have 2 more after that, and I would say probably Ving and Vang are the next 2 I'm most worried about being our lowest level companions.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it lasts an hour, so it'll all be decided in an hour anyway. So,
unless we get hit by waves, unless they decide to spread out all their forces.
Yeah, fair enough. Waves are good for us.
Yeah,
frankly,
right. 64 at once is a lot.
Yes, yes.
How can I possibly manage it?
The sun has fully set. Darkness has descended on the small valley of Silver Springs Gulch. A low mist covers the fields, not enough to obscure vision or provide cover, but maybe enough to entice people to enter the fields where you place so many traps. Maybe 30 minutes before the moon fully rises, a light cloud cover might keep you in darkness a little bit longer. Late, maybe 10 p.m., the energy of the cheers that had roused everyone's spirits is waning, and at this point, you hear a low rumble building and building from the plateau above. It's the sound of horses. The bandits have arrived. I want you to give me morale checks, basically intimidation checks for all the villager teams.
Let's do it clockwise really quick.
I have a question or a request.
You bet.
I am a Tempest cleric. Would it be possible for me to roll persuasion or religion to bolster anyone near me?
You already give advantage to anyone near you.
Just
from being there. And then most of the other characters give +1s anyway. So let's do clockwise. This first team gets a +1 because Nambe's there.
Yeah.
Okay, so 1d20.
Yeah, so that is a 19 for the first team.
Yeah.
It's a 13, sorry. Because they don't get advantage.
Yeah, so again, +1 for these teams here.
And that's three Bowmen. Teams.
Yep, 3 archer
teams. Does McQueen give
gives
advantage?
Plus 1.
Just plus one. Okay, so that is a 19, a 6, and a 7.
The field road 2 teams, they get a +2.
Okay. So that is a 6 and a 19.
And then the 2...
Then there's the Petra's team.
Yeah, Petra's team is within
advantage.
30 feet of me, so she's at advantage. So Petra's team is a 12.
Okay, and then the East Bridge team gets advantage because they're within 30 feet of Walton.
Okay, and the East Bridge team rolled a 15.
Okay, so only 2 teams failed. One of the pole arm teams and one of the archer teams are very, very agitated. And Vin and Vang are like yelling at them to get in line. And they almost start to bolt, but they don't. So the thunder starts to build, and it's coming hard and fast.
Maybe none of you have ever heard this many horsemen galloping at full speed. This is a unique and unusual circumstance that you find yourself in.
Oh, roll initiative.
Hey, that is hopefully something I am quite good at, seeing as I have the alert feat and cannot be surprised. I have a 17 for initiative with my +8.
I also have a 17.
Yep. Wow,
that's pretty gosh darn good.
I have a +3, but I have alert, so I have a +8 to initiative rolls. I'm the quick draw artist.
As a quick draw guy,
yeah, I gotta have the really high
quick draw gal.
Quick draw gal.
You have a +3 on initiative, then you will go first.
Yeah.
Forrest got a 17, Team McQueen got an 11, Kombe got a 6, and Vin got an 8, and Vang got a 13.
The bandits have turned the corner and are now bearing down on the town. A yell goes up from your team on the west wall, and the bandits return with a battle yell of their own. You hear the whistles of arrows from outside the town, along with a pause and the galloping and whinnying of horses. The illusion of the newly fortified wall and barricades
seems to have confused them. However, that doesn't last long, as you hear the first group of bandits continue riding south along the west wall. As they do so, they fall into range of the dark vision-empowered McQueen and the archers along the rooftops, and the twang from your archers' bows is clearly audible. A cheer goes up as it seems a number of the bandits have been killed.
Some serious ranges.
This is exciting. I think before we parted, I think Walton would say to Jane, if things go bad in the south, you'll need to cover it. I can hold it up here if need be.
Jane will have given you a nod. I think, yeah, especially seeing as that's the case, I'm within 30 feet to get to wherever I need to get to for my turn.
Okay, so 32 bowmen just let loose on the west side of town. Combat has definitely taken a little bit of damage. They seem to be focusing on whoever they can see who's a little bit more armored.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. So does that mean our pike unit took damage, or
your pike unit took some damage, but then Combat took a bunch of damage as well.
Okay. Right.
Is it possible for him to get into cover and be able to heal from cover?
Well, everybody in that area heals 5 points.
Five. Yeah.
With his presence, so he'll get some of that back. But he's still not quite at half. But he's injured.
Let's all just remember the Magnificent Seven, the movie. A lot of those seven die.
Yep.
All right.
True.
So as the next round kicks off, you can't quite see what's going on, but you can hear that first group of riders continuing south along the west wall. And unfortunately for you, they don't choose to go up the field road. Instead, they choose to keep riding east and cross the shallow crossing of the river there at the far south end of the map, and are moving their way to the east side of town.
South end of town.
Yeah, they have enough people that they can probably go for this round.
Okay. Well,
We were expecting this.
Let me describe it. So round one, the first group of horse riders came into town and unleashed holy hell of arrows on the west wall, damaging Hombe and the people defending the west wall. They've continued to move south. So horse riders have continued to move south. Some have crossed the southern crossing, and another group is moving along the west wall. A third group, so 16 in total in each of these groups, is now at the west wall.
And they're still, I think they're just at the edge of the vision that we have from the light.
Okay. Right. So as the bandits continue to make their movements to encircle the town, your teams from the rooftop and Kambe let loose another blast of attacks. The arrows flying through the air, striking their targets, and a blast of radiant energy from Kambe out to the bandits. Another cheer goes up from your side as clearly you've struck true. But it's short-lived, because at the same time, an equal amount of arrows have been returned from the bandit, and you hear a scream. A few seconds later, Speck comes running up. Kambe is down.
That's not good. Losing our healer.
Yeah, and like the first round? Yeah. Like, geez, I guess that it is a lot of shots. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
I have a stopgap.
You, of course, if you have an heal, you can apply healing to the healer, but healer is down.
Okay.
Walton can do a lot of things. He heals the land. People, not so much.
I want to act now.
Okay. All right. Go for it.
Jane, kind of hearing that from down the line, will stride 3 feet down here, pull out her wand, and point it at the edge of the shadows. Mm-hmm. And since Fireball has an effective casting range of 150 feet, I'm going to Fireball the edge of my vision.
Right on. Do it.
you're just like, I can't see anything, but I'm dropping
a Fireball. Yeah, it's like, I can like see the edge of a horse, and I'm just like, die.
Go for it. Love
it. And I will. So Jane likes her lightning. And for a little bit of the effect, I'm going to cast a third level Fireball. But she will spend a single sorcery point at the moment to change it to lightning damage. And doing that will give all of the people affected by the Fireball because of her Shard of the Shadowfell disadvantage on the saving throw.
Ooh, all right.
So it is a DC 19 dexterity saving throw at disadvantage.
Okay.
And this must look like just like a little bit of arc of electricity going and just like leaping out into the dark, and then all of a sudden it's just this big flash bulb.
Yeah.
And you see horses light. Screaming. So somebody roll me a D6, please, as well.
I will a 6. And to cast it, Jane will post up a wand, pointing it forward, and just for a second just go, I say bang. And the anything flammable in the area is lit on fire.
So I think the edge of the tree catches on fire there. There's a big tree.
Which will hopefully give us some light.
Sure. So you rolled a six.
Yeah, I rolled a six.
That's got to be good, right?
Yeah, here's hoping.
And what was the DC save?
19 at disadvantage.
Three of the groups fail. One group succeeds.
Okay, and that's 35 light damage.
Level casters are messy,
right?
Yep. And yeah, if I'm essentially targeting on this guy, it's a 20. It's like a 20 or 30 foot radius.
Yeah, it's 20 foot radius.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, 20 foot sphere. So I'm definitely definitely hitting whoever's over here.
Yeah, there's nobody over there, but you're getting that group of 16 who all look very injured.
Pombe, you will be avenged.
Yes. More important note, have I killed all their horses?
No.
Okay. The riders took the damage.
Yeah, you have to give me a little bit of latitude with this many bad guys.
That's totally fine.
They're each of these, so just what I've done here in order to make it more manageable but also equally deadly, each of these little groups, they're a bandit horde. So there are four bandits that operate as a single unit, and they're mounted. So they all have a shared hit point pool.
I should have upcast that a couple levels. I probably could have.
Could have killed
all of them in one go.
None of them are dead, but they all, like, the horses are rearing up and
let the archers do their work.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's also convincing them to move on to the next point down the road as possibly an easier place to get in.
After getting hit by giant goddamn lightning bolt.
Yeah.
So they're all injured, but not dead. All right. Is Walton doing anything this round?
I think Walton is going to move a little closer to the bridge. I don't know that it improves my vision or anything. And I have a feature called Resolute Stance. So at the start of my turn, no action required. I can assume a defensive stance that lasts until the next turn. And I can't be grappled, and attack rolls against me have disadvantage.
Okay.
I'm just really getting ready to hold the line.
So the bandits have continued in their efforts to encircle the town despite taking significant damage from first the archers and Nambe before he died, and then from Jane's crispy electrical fireball. The first team that came through has moved fully onto the east side of town on the other side of the river and is making their way up through the buildings on the east side. The second team that came through that took an immense amount of damage, including a number of them killed by Nambe, is starting to make their way up the field road to attack the field gate. And then finally, the team on the west wall that took so much damage is attacking the west wall directly, and another group of 16 has appeared and are leveraging their crossbows to fire into the town.
Okay. I got the spell slots for it with the rod of absorption. I'm going to pump a second fireball to catch the new group and the back end of the original group.
Okay.
As they're all moving, just try to cut down on the amount of fire. It's no disadvantage this time because I'm not going to burn the
sorcery
point.
So roll me another d6 to determine what their saves are. I've got a big table here that has all your
roll. Six.
Six again. All right.
And this time it's through the rod, so I won't burn the spell slot, and I will.
And it's a DC save, which is a crazy
DC 19.
Oh.
Yeah, I have eight plus. I have a magic item that increases my spell attack and DCs by two.
All right. Well, only one group saves again.
And this is including the...
So you got six of them, is that correct?
Yeah, I got six.
Yeah, so it was. In fact, it was the same group that saved last time. Saved this.
Oh, so it'll have taken the same amount of damage as everybody else. Hopefully, chunking them will reduce the amount of damage that they deal. Blaster casters are pretty spooky.
Yeah, you roll damage?
Yes.
30. Oh, I'm sorry, 32.
And this time it's just fire. So where the first one was like the spark of lightning and then like the transformer explosion, this is a lot more kind of traditional fireball. I think it almost has a silvery quality to it. It's like kind of like a whitish fire.
All right, well, 32 damage is a lot of damage.
Yeah, here's hoping I have killed at least one group. So we have the group heading towards the East Bridge, which is still four groups of four. So that's 16 guys
so
there.
There's like 24 people not accounted for.
We have the 32 people at the West Gate at the moment. I think at least two groups went down from Kambe or archers that are heading up the South Fields right now, which is another... I think that's all the riders accounted for.
Until I see them at the bridge, or I'm slightly worried that they're going to try to forward stuff and end up in the barn, but...
Yeah.
All right, so one of the original group
goes down, but all of just continued damage to the, all of these groups. All of these groups over here are injured.
Okay.
But you have only killed one of them.
I have horrendously wounded the rest of them.
Horrendously wounded.
Hopefully our archers can deal with them.
Now they deal a horrendous amount of damage back. Most of their fire is actually going to focus on that team of pikemen, and they actually slaughter them.
Okay.
Well, sorry, villagers.
This side is fairly unprotected. The archer team does take a little bit of damage as well, although they are not dead. They're half injured. McQueen does take a few hits as she's popping out and delivering damage herself. She does take a few arrow shots, though not very much.
Okay.
All right, round four.
Round four. I think at this point it's probably a good idea to get Horst and Co. moving towards the...
Do we want to send this group of pikemen?
All the groups from the center square, right?
Yeah, down that way.
Yeah,
well.
That's the thought. Like, we send them together.
Basically try to get to that point.
Can
the pikemen dash?
Yes.
Like, is that a thing? So 10, 20, 30, 40 feet.
And Horst, like, right behind them. And I don't know what Horst's range looks like. He has a longbow?
Yes.
If he has to dash to get to be...
You're right.
If he has a longbow, though, I mean, he could...
Yeah, he could
move up to, like,
and,
where you are, and then...
Yeah, and start putting shots out. Probably going to send out the another fireball, seems like.
Yeah.
Fireball is a great spell.
This is a perfect use for a fireball.
Yeah. I'll put down...
All right, let's do initiative order now. All right, Jane, you're up.
Jane, still using the Rod of Absorption, not going to put any sorcery points into it. It's going to do the same thing as last time, catching the entirety of that back group and that kind of straggler at the end of the initial group in a fireball.
Okay.
8d6. Very poor roll.
What'd you roll?
I rolled a 19 for damage.
Okay.
Got four ones.
And Andy, why don't you give me a d6 roll for their saving throws?
Oh, should I have been rolling low this entire time?
It does on the d6. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
It's just a random table of their roll. So whatever.
It's a four.
So I don't have to roll 30 times.
Makes sense. So here's hoping I will have a.
Yeah, you. They all fail. Well, a 19 is ridiculously high.
Yeah, on, true. Yeah. I'm just hoping that my damage roll is high enough to knock out that last five group.
Yeah.
That's like, there's like, be like 60 hit point groups is spooky. So 19 fire damage apiece. The tree is well and surely on fire at this rate. It's just fully been lit.
As a huge puff of smoke and dirt goes up in the air, and as it clears, you see no signs of any bandits on this side. God damn you.
I'm just going to keep pumping fireball into this group until they're gone.
Until they are gone.
Yeah.
Maintain my ability to do the fun things for later.
Plan B.
All right,
this is possible.
Full honesty to anyone listening to this, I have built a blaster caster. They will blast and they will cast.
That's right. You do notice, and some screams go up, you hear from the villagers, this group of bandits that is working along the east side of the town has set one of the buildings on fire on the south side.
So, I'm sorry,
you probably can't see them.
So even though we pulled all the villagers in, now villagers are screaming?
Or
are we
just they're screaming because their town is being burnt. They're upset.
Right, but
they're
like,
upset.
Yeah,
they're not screaming because there's anybody.
Oh, got it. I see it now on the map. I see where that building is.
Does that reveal them to us?
Yeah.
You see them riding north. They're riding north from there.
As the bulk of the town survives this, I will call this a success.
Yeah.
This group moves up. Right here.
Okay, so when they move past that fire,
the barrel.
Yeah, what do I do?
Can the queen shoot it?
Yeah.
Set it off?
Yeah, yeah. Give me a shot.
Yeah, I've got McQueen.
I've got McQueen.
Yeah, you got McQueen. You go for it. I've been fireballing a lot.
Let's see. So they have plus 10 on the longbow. So
assuming they have like some stuff they can, like a torch or something to light the arrow.
Sure.
You rolled a two.
I rolled a two. Oh, Jesus.
He actually missed
still
it.
A 12.
Treasure gunk.
still misses. It is a pretty difficult shot.
Not all things can work the way you want them to.
She was
distracted by all the explosions and arrows flying from other places.
I'm going to say that you are. Why doesn't Walton give me a survival check to see the difficulty, how well you hid this trap?
The field road
as these archers line up.
That is a dirty 20.
Well, the first group just rides straight into it.
Okay.
Straight into the hole.
Diggy hole.
So they are in the hole. The second group stops and they are firing their arrows. So we'll get to them when they go. Let's keep cranking down initiative order. Walton, what are you doing?
I kind of look over. I've got good movement. I'm going to move back towards the middle of town, which is 40 feet. And I'm really just keeping an eye on things. I think of myself as being responsible for this like north gate, and I don't want to get too distracted by everything else that's happening. So I'm just staying there, and I think I would ready an action to cast Entangle through the Farmer's Friend if the next group that I see.
Okay, great. So then we wake our way down, and then McQueen misses her shot. Okay.
Are archers any shooting from them?
Yeah, your archers can let loose. Let's see how many groups of archers. You got three groups of archers.
I think our last group of archers is actually in range for the guys in the pit.
Okay. You can deliver 3d6 damage any way you want to these bad guys.
You want
to
roll, Pete?
3d6. I say 3d6 to the group in the back, because the group in the pit's going to get stabbed by pikemen.
Yeah, yeah. You can also split it up and do 2d6 and then 1d6, whatever you want to do.
The guys who are standing in the back, just like drilling.
12 damage. Okay. Hopefully knock down one of their member.
Yes, one of them. There are now three of them.
And then for the pit, we have a pike block right there.
So that's 1d10. You get one hit, and it's 1d10 plus one. Plus you get, I think you get extra.
I get plus four.
Plus four damage. Yeah.
So that is I think seven total. And I don't know if I'm falling in the pit did damage.
Yes. Give me 1d6, 10-foot pit, right?
Yep. I believe so. One. God.
Okay. So how much?
Sorry, I'm not rolling hot.
Yeah. So you did to the one in the pit.
It is a total, for the guys in the pit, it's a total of 8 damage. Okay. For the guys behind them, it is a total of 12 damage.
And then somebody roll me a d6.
I can do that.
5.
Next in the turn order is the bandits. The ones in the pit are going to attempt to climb out of the pit, and then the ones behind the pit are going to fire their crossbows, and they do... I'm sorry, what did you roll on your d6, Andy?
I rolled a 5.
They are going to fire back at the archers that are firing at them. So they hit twice, doing 10 points of damage to one of those archer groups. This one that's closest. They now have 2 hit points left. All right. Next up in our turn order, so many of these guys are dead. They're dead, and they're dead, and they're dead. They're dead. It's like, holy crap. Walton, give me a perception roll.
Perception. 5. I'm distracted.
You are definitely distracted by all the activity. As you turn your head for 1 second, you hear and some growls and then screams from your spear villagers as all of a sudden you turn around, and just in time to see packs of wolves descending from the rooftop
The fuck did they get up there?
Okay.
They successfully climbed or jumped.
That I was holding a reaction.
Yes.
Or holding an action to cast Entangle.
You can.
Can I position Entangle? So Entangle, grasping weeds and vines sprout from the ground in a 20-foot square, starting from a point within range. Creature must succeed on the strength saving throw or be restrained, and it's a concentration spell. It's basically, I'm going to the northwestern one.
Mm-hmm.
I want to position it in a way that it entangles the northwest group, but not the...
These hordes of wolves swarm, so they're actually able to occupy the spears.
Oh, the same space as
same the space. They're not entirely over it, but they are occupying a corner of it. You can get a portion of them, and it can affect them, though, but just so you know.
Then, you know what? I'm restrained is... Restrained means you just don't have any movement, is that right?
That's right.
And they also attack at disadvantage if you're restrained.
I'm going to entangle everybody. Pikemen, all of them. It's just a 20 20-foot square of that whole group. No. I just like blast them all with Entangle. Everybody's got disadvantage, and then I'll take care of business.
And what's the size of Entangle?
It's a 20-foot square. I'm casting it through the Farmer's Friend.
Sure.
You see 15 strength save for everyone involved.
Okay. The villagers fail.
The two groups surrounding the pikemen, the north ones fail, and the group on the south side succeeds. But both groups viciously attack the pikemen, doing 16 points of damage, or gravely injured, but not quite dead yet. 4 hit points left.
All right, next turn. Top of the order.
More puppies.
More wolves appear at the north gate this time, rushing forward and jumping over.
Over the barricade.
10-foot high barricade?
Yes. They are not normal wolves.
That is evidently the case.
Okay.
And this group jumps forward. But actually, I'm going to have them, they're going to be slightly overlapping you, Andy.
No, that's fine.
Oh, that is inconvenient for me.
I'm so sorry I'm making it hard on you, Pete, after you murdered.
Yeah, murdered all your men. Murdered half. Let's just be 32. Clear. Like, the bulk of the forces
James
are...
murders 32 bandits in 2 rounds.
Yes.
Hey, fireball, it does work.
It does work. Right, Andy, all right, so they are attacking you. They get does a 24 hit you?
Yes.
Okay. You are hit twice for 14 points of piercing damage.
Okay.
Out of the darkness, 2 more figures appear, leaping over the buildings between the North Road and the Bridge Road, landing in the midst of the wolves, the pole arm team, and Walton. Firing away with 6 guns, you see a dark-skinned humanoid and a Capra folk, a goat person, both attired in Western gear, dark clothing, dusters, cowboy hats, screaming at the top of their lungs, almost howling, vulpine-like in their countenance.
A werewolf goat. What is the goat thing from Mexican?
No, it's a chupacabra.
A chupacabra. Yeah, it's a chupacabra.
Right.
It's Mr. Tumnus, the chupacabra.
Exactly. So,
thought about raging in my last turn, and I was like, there's nobody here yet.
The first one,
rage just yet.
The first one takes 2 shots with their pistol, rolling a 15 and an 11 to hit you, Andy.
15 and 11 will miss.
And the second one fires first at that group of villagers there, hitting it with a 7 and killing the last of those villagers there.
Okay.
Well, you made my choices easier.
And then rolling a 20 to hit you.
A 20 will hit me.
Doing 14 points of damage to you.
Okay, that's not good.
And now, Jane, it is your turn.
Jane will turn around and see this and go, shit. Just absolutely like, ah, shit. We'll step up to behind the well and in a loud voice go, I'm pretty sure I said bang. And I will cast a 5th level fireball. I will spend a sorcery point to transmute it to lightning damage. And then I will spend a channeled divinity for it to be maximized lightning damage.
Oh, Lord.
So all pretty much, I will position it so that the 2 wolves in the back and one of the wolves engaged with Walton and Mr. Thomas and Trippy have to make a DC 19 dexterity saving throw at disadvantage or take 60 points of lightning damage.
Okay.
So this is what sorcerer clerics do when you're a Tempest Sorcerer. You choose a target and promptly disintegrate it.
Just nuke it.
Mr. Tumnus succeeds. Trippy fails.
So if he succeeds, I will use my reaction and silvery barbs him.
Okay. All right, he fails on that. Who gets?
And are you taking the advantage, Peter?
I will give the advantage to Walton, who's going next.
Okay. Great.
And one of the wolves succeeds.
Okay.
So how much damage?
It is 60 lightning damage to anyone who failed, or 30 to anyone who made it.
They are not dead, but they are looking. There's like smoke emanating off of each of them.
Yeah, this is a straight up lightning bolt falls from the sky in this cloud of the sky.
Heat lightning.
Right. How rough are Trippy and Tumnus looking?
Everybody looks pretty hurt. Not dead,
okay.
But pretty hurt.
Okay. I'll leave it at that then.
All right, Walton, you're up.
I think Walton, with all these wolves around him, I can't remember the line. Do you guys remember the Looney Tunes with the sheepdog and who was always like fighting, you know, checking in, doing the time clock with the wolves and everything?
Oh my
and
God.
I think that's Walton's vibe. He's been bitten, he's been hit by this gun, and he just grinds his grip grip on the farmer's friend and just slams it into the ground and rolls his shoulders and goes,
"You might be wolves, but I'm the dog that's going to take care of you."
And and that will be his rage. So he's going to, he will rage. I'm going to use the advantage on these. I'm going to take a reckless attack for my first attack, which gives me advantage on the first attack of my round. And I'm going to attack this guy to the south with the farmer's friend, which, so that's, that's a 28 to hit. So that's a 28 to hit. And that is a D6 plus 8 in damage. So actually, he just stabs him with, so that's 13 points of damage from the first attack. Mm-hmm.
This is the wolves that are
around that are threatening me.
Yeah, not particularly hurt.
There's one pack that I blasted to pieces, and then the pack below you.
No packs have been blasted to pieces.
These guys got caught in the AoE too.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
I didn't roll.
Yeah. Yeah, they should have been.
Okay, they both failed. All right, so that one is more injured, but not, like, are you attacking the one that was injured?
I'll have it be the one that was injured.
Still not, you did 13?
Yeah.
Still not dead.
Okay, so then I'm going to...
taking 73 points of damage. Oh.
Yeah, I have two attacks per turn. I am going to use my second attack. I'm going to use the advantage that I got from the silvery barbs, and that hit as well. So that is a 23 to hit.
Ooh.
Same one.
Oof.
Which is 12 points of piercing damage.
Okay. Still not dead, but very, very good.
Yeah, so that's, I do those two things. I rage and do that. Okay, yep. Yeah, I think that's what I do. I smash things.
Right on. Okay, Walton, the Vin and Vang, are they holding the line where they are?
I think Vin and Vang should probably go in and start chopping up guys in a hole.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Roll to attack the you can move them forward and then have them attack the guys in the hole.
So it's a plus five. I think it's plus five for one or plus six. Oh my gosh. So that was a six.
That's Vin, we'll say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Look, these guys get all the nat ones. It's okay.
Plus, and then a 14.
The 14 does hit.
14 does hit, and that is
bang.
Plus one halberd, which does.
They also have great weapon tester. If you wanted to take a minus five, you could add 10 more damage to it.
I don't think that's going to hit. So it's a 1d10 plus 4. So it's 6 points of damage to the guys in the hole. Do I have advantage for hitting people in the hole?
Good question.
Well, they spent their last turn climbing out of the hole, so I will say that you don't, because they're on the edge. They're on the
left. Yeah, they're just... Okay, we should start shoving.
Yeah, just put them back in the hole.
Shove them.
Everybody push!
All right, so how much damage did you do all together?
I rolled 6, yeah.
They're definitely not dead. Okay, next up is on our combat tracker, McQueen.
McQueen can put her shots into the last set of guys on the road that are still standing on the road.
Yep,
yep.
McQueen, she has sharpshooter, right?
Correct.
Why not make these two sharpshooter attacks? These guys probably don't have great AC if they're just bandits, so two shots at sharpshooter, right? So I guess I will roll those. So I believe they're at plus 5 of sharpshooter, which is a 14 and a 24.
They both hit.
And she does a D8 plus how much?
Sharpshooter gives her plus 10 to damage or something crazy.
Yeah, but what's her normal damage bonus?
Her normal damage is plus 4. But D8 plus
4. Plus 4. Okay, so it's...
Oh, I'm sorry. A D8...
A plus 6, plus, right? Because she has a plus 2 longbow.
Plus 5. Plus 5. Right? It's plus 3 plus 5. Yep.
Okay, so it is 2D8 plus 30 then, so 36 damage.
The ones in the back?
Yeah.
They go down.
And then,
just obliterate.
Oh my god, you're totally just obliterating.
I don't know if she can ride and move or if we can control her like a character, but I know what I would like her to do.
Yeah, go ahead and move her.
How much movement does she have? 40?
50.
50. Ooh, even better. She can ride an action surge.
Yep.
And then put two shots into
Drippy and
Mr. And just Mr. Thomas. Put two shots into one of them.
All right.
Just put two shots. So which one of them looks worse?
They look about the same.
They can go into Drippy then. Magic longbow. I'll say not at sharpshooter.
Okay, so plus 10 to hit.
Plus 10. So those both super hit, being a... I should have done sharpshooter, apparently, with a 29 and a 28 to hit.
Yes, they both hit.
And then this is 2d8 plus 10 total, which will be 16 points of damage to Trivi from a magic longbow.
How many points of damage?
16. He's still standing?
He's still standing, but...
I'm still standing.
Yeah, that's McQueen.
Okay, next up. All right.
If our archers are next up, I'm pretty sure they're shooting the...
They all have initiative order one.
Ah, okay. Makes sense.
We never said what we did with all those silver coins.
Yeah.
I was going to say like, oh, we should just have like, for, we should have like
Jane's a bunch running around and there's like just this big bag of silver.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, like literally, I think that's what my melee weapon is just a massive sack of silver. You know, Walton has a blacksmith as a proficiency. So I was like, yeah, he would just sit there and just like manufacture, like spend a day doing nothing but just like turning coins into
arrowheads.
You know? Can Mr. Tumnus, that's just mean, man. Fucking mean.
A shout comes up from the far side of the
east bridge
of the west wall. The archers on the west wall. Two figures have leapt entirely over the barricades and landed there. A large half-ogre kind of...
Ogre Ted.
And a woman wearing sort of a fancy dress and carrying a shotgun.
Okay. Bam, Bam, Betty. Jeez.
Okay. Six lieutenants. This is four.
And Bam Bam is going to move and fire her shotgun at these archers.
I have some complaints about the quality of these barriers. I don't feel like they're slowing down. We spent all this time to like create all these barriers for people, and they're just pretty gosh darn well
for the 64 bandits. So I will just
fair enough. Yeah, this would be a much messier fight if there were 64 bandits racing around in this town as well. Yeah.
Hitting the archers and doing.
We are going to lose all these units.
Yeah,
we're just going to lose.
Yeah, I've all might honest, save. Like, we might save Petra. Written them all off.
Yeah.
As terrible as it is, we are going to save the townspeople and maybe Petra.
Yeah. Horst. We gotta get Horst into this. We gotta get Horst into this fight a little bit more. Horst is nothing. Yeah.
And those archers die. Okay. And Ogre Ted moves up. Next up on the list. Last of the bandit hordes. Along the east side, a number of more fires break out.
Yeah. Well, they were already pretty much writing off that side of town, so.
Yeah, I mean, that was the plan, basically involved writing it off.
And at that same time, Petra yells down to you, Jane. Mm-hmm. Jane, the old man, he went back to his house in the mill. It's on fire.
Jesus Christ, but, okay.
And...
Where is this the fire? The mill is like up here.
Way up to the north. It's across the bridge.
Okay, time to get real flashy.
Oh, and that's where... Okay, got it. Okay.
I managed to save this guy. These guys owe me double.
Double of nothing? You're well aware, Jane, that Vin and Vang have taken a very strong liking to the old man, and it's quite likely that they may bolt to try to save him as well, unless you tell them to stay.
I will yell at Vin and Vang and go, I got this, hold the line. Gotta crack my knuckles and get moving.
This last... the last bandit horde in any close proximity is going to attack the villagers
with their crossbows.
Hitting and hitting twice and doing...
Whoa! I'm now really wishing I had a distant spell.
Oh, that you could...
Because then I could
eat something away over there.
Right. This group of villagers are not dead, but they take a fair amount of damage.
If I had moved farther on my turn, I think I would have been able to...
All right.
This map is so large. Okay, hopefully I have one more turn to get over there. Here's hoping.
All right, we're back up to the top. The wolf packs attack again.
Okay, so the top four of the wolf packs probably our werewolf friends who I've tried to lightning fry. My best impression of the disintegration spell. Oh, wasn't one of the wolf packs entangled?
Oh, that one was. You're right. What's the save to get out of the...
It's a DC 15 strength check.
And then did you take your turn to do it?
Yeah.
I believe so.
DC 16?
15, I said.
They make it. But that's
their turn. Yeah.
And you can... So then the entangle spell will drop.
They stay there. But this one can go. They're just going to come here and pile... Dog pile.
Yeah,
Walton.
That's okay.
All right, so all three of these groups are going to attack Walton. They all have pack tactics while they're encircling you, so they all have advantage.
It's okay.
You also reckless attacked, so all the attacks are at advantage either way.
All right, let's see. There you go.
That's kind of like, I knew they were going to have advantage anyway. You can't stack advantage, so I'm like, well, why not?
Why not? Right. A 17, a 20. 22 and a 24.
All of those will hit. My AC is a 17.
Just watching.
There's lots of dice.
That's about to do a bunch of individual attacks, so they'll all do really poor damage.
26 points of damage.
Okay, so I'm...
And you need to give me a 3 strength saving throws.
So
okay, so I'm raging, so all of that is halved, so it's only 13 points of damage.
Pretty sure you have advantage on strength saving throws, too.
Yeah, and I have advantage on strength saving throws.
And checks.
And checks, so... Oh, with advantage, I rolled 2 2s. Hang on a second. Plus 9. I rolled an 11. So
you are knocked prone. I can't make you knock prone once.
But
you
are knocked prone. It's all good. I'm knocked prone.
You're surrounded by 12
wolves. Yeah, no,
12 dire wolves.
Yeah, exactly. It's all good.
Like one nips at your feet, the other one bites you in the back, one jumps on you. You are now prone.
Okay.
Which means they have advantage to attack you. it's like I can't triple stack advantage, dude.
Yeah, no, it's all good.
All right, Mr. Tumnus and Trippy.
Okay, sweet.
So Mr. Tumnus, one wolf pack escape, right? So Mr. Tumnus and Trippy go. They are both going to drink potions.
I am entirely willing to smite these fools again.
Mr. Tumnus moves behind those buildings. And
I'm guessing he's jumping over?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. They have extraordinary leaping ability. They're able to leap 30 feet. So they just sort of bound away and drinking potions.
I don't think Mr. Tumnus is going to survive much longer.
Maybe it's Trippy. I'm trying to figure out.
Sorry, who are they attacking?
They're not attacking anybody. They are drinking.
They're both drank potions.
Scattered and drinking potions. All right.
Our heroes have managed to successfully defend against the first wave of the Moonfang Gang, 64 bandits on horseback, with only a few left scattered on the east side of town, setting fire to the buildings there. They are now faced with the lieutenant of the Moonfang Gang and multiple packs of wolves invading from both the west side and the north side. Ogre Ted and Bam Bam Birdie on the west side of town have jumped over barricades and are encroaching into the center of town. And Trippy and Mr. Tumnus, gravely injured, but still active, along with 12 wolves who are currently on top of Walton, chomping and biting away. Can they survive this latest wave? Can they rescue the old man? We'll find out in 2 weeks. Oh, and for your Halloween goodness, Andy.
Yes.
How do you know a vampire is sick? They can't stop coughing. I know, terrible. Thanks for listening, everybody.